WMAL salutes our listeners in Potomac. Thanks for listening in Potomac and throughout the DMV to WMAL. Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Colonnais.
Well, good afternoon to you. 3:06 on WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up today, 3:30, Selena Zito is with us from the Washington Examiner. We'll talk about these school board meetings, in particular Loudoun County. So many parents confronting that awful school board and the treatment of the children in that county. It's just abusive. The parents trying to seize control and correct things. 4 o'clock, Harry Jackson's here, a Fairfax County parent who's had enough of that school board, who's formed a bipartisan coalition to go after the disaster there in Fairfax County. We'll cover it here on WMAL. 4:30, Sean Higgins joins us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll talk about all these gigantic backlogs right now to get products to people and the inflation that's occurring, meaning you and I are getting poorer by the day. And Mark Morgan will join us at 5 o'clock, the former acting commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, to update us on the border crisis. The location of the crisis is a bit of a whack-a-mole. It's moving around on the southern border. We'll give you the latest update of where the mole's head is popping up and where a normal administration would drop the hammer. But that's, of course, not happening in the Biden era. Great to have you with us today. You can join us on the phone at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. The president of the United States, for what he is talking right now. He's saying that he's going to help relieve these supply chain issues by compelling the massive port in Los Angeles, where so many of these goods come in from Asia, to stay open and operate 24/7. Here's Joe Biden just moments ago.
By staying open 7 days a week through the night and on the weekends, the port of Los Angeles will open over 60 extra hours a week will be open. In total, that will almost double the number of hours that the port is open for business from earlier this year. That means an increase in the hours for workers to be moving cargo off ships onto trucks and rail cars to get to their destination. And more than that, the night hours are critical for increasing the movement of goods because highways are less crowded in the evening, at night. In fact, during off-peak hours in Los Angeles, cargo leaves the port at a 25% faster pace than during the day shift.
Uh-huh.
So by increasing the number of late night hours of operation and opening up for less crowded hours when the goods can move faster, today's announcement has the potential to be a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, this is so typical. How many times do we get an announcement from the Biden administration where they pretend like they're fixing a problem that they had nothing to do with? How often are we going to get an announcement like this? Hey, guys, I've got the solution. Isn't this what Superman had to deal with Lex Luthor all the time? Like, he would create problems that only he had the solution to. That was the way the comic books went over and over. It's like every comic book villain, actually. They're like, oh, this pandemic, I'm the only one with the cure. Yeah, you also created the virus. Comic books, I'm talking about the comic books, not COVID. Although, speaking of COVID and who was involved in creating the virus, who's pushing the cures, I think it's kind of similar. Dr. Fauci has some splaining to do. He's not very interested in splaining these days. Not about that, at least. But on this front, we've got massive inflation going on in the United States economy right now. We've got barren shelves. Have you been to a store lately? Have you noticed how Soviet things are becoming? Where's all the product? You're in like major chain stores. You can walk into a Target right now. I try to keep my wife from doing that. She stays there for a while. But she doesn't have to these days because there's nothing there for her. You look down the aisles, you see these gaps, massive holes on the shelves that were once so well stocked and constantly flowing. Not anymore. Not during the Biden economy. Nope. In fact, things have gotten so bad, the Biden administration is now admitting that it's contributed to how badly things have gotten. I saw today in the New York Times that in this announcement about how Biden is announcing that he's going to battle the supply chain woes and announcing that the Port of Los Angeles is now, as I said, moving to 24/7 operation. The Biden administration officials, they say administration officials acknowledge on Tuesday in a call with reporters, this would have been yesterday, in a call with reporters, that the $1.9 trillion economic aid package that Mr. Biden signed into law in March, remember this, when Joe Biden gets into office, one of the first things he does is, oh, we've got to cut a bunch of checks to the American people, because Trump already did it, you know, back in the heat of the pandemic, back in 2020. Well, Trump did it, and he can't get all the credit for cutting checks to American citizens by giving them back their own money. I want some of that credit. So Biden comes along, and they pass this gigantic $2 trillion package and start sending out checks again. And they extend unemployment bonuses on into September. It's just a complete disaster. It's keeping workers out of the market. It's injecting cash we didn't have from tax revenue, meaning it needed to be printed, into the economy. And what happens when you print $2 trillion in cash and infuse it right into the economy? What happens? What happens? You get inflation. And what is inflation? That's where we all become poor. That's where people who earn wages for a living or salaries for a living, if your income comes from that, you're getting poorer. How much poorer? Well, in September, the numbers are just in this morning. Inflation was up 5.4% since last year. It's the highest inflation rate we've had in 13 years. The highest in 13 years. What happened 13 years ago? That was the 2008 crash. So inflation is through the roof. What about wages? We keep hearing wages are up. The Biden administration keeps telling everybody, oh, everybody's making more money now. Don't worry. Wages are up. How much are they up by, though? 4.6%. Okay. This is not that hard to do. Wages are up year over year, 4.6%. Inflation is up 5.4%, meaning all of the goods you pay for are now 5.4% on average more expensive. But you're only making 4.6% more money. You're losing. You have lost money. Nobody's wages are up. Their wages are down. They're real inflation adjusted. How much stuff can I buy wages are down thanks to the Biden economy. And here you have Joe Biden in the New York Times, administration officials acknowledging that $1.9 trillion economic aid package from March contributed to the supply chain issues by boosting demand for goods. And so therefore, we get all this inflation. And therefore, we get these staggering supply chain shortages. It's one of many factors, by the way, behind the supply chain shortages. Certainly COVID as a pandemic and the havoc that stopped manufacturing has had an impact. But we've had massive disruptions, not only in the amount of money that's being printed, and therefore you and I have less money now, thanks to Joe Biden, of value, even though it might look like more. It's not more. Your buying power is down. There's also the job problem, people who were kept out of the labor market. And now, additionally, we get this week that 4.3 million people quit their jobs in August. Put differently, that was 3% of the entire workforce quit in August. Where did they go? Why did they leave? The administration is trying to spin this into something great. Oh, well, everybody's leaving their jobs because they're going to find better jobs. It's such a good economy for them that they can go find better jobs. And I'm sure that's true in some cases. I'm sure some people got better jobs. They saw better opportunities. But the market's been so disrupted. What happens when 3% of the workforce quits? Like, what is that going to do to the likeliness that you're going to be able to get affordable products? It decreases that chance, doesn't it? The inflation goes up yet again. Another inflationary pressure. As people are quitting and now you've got fewer people to compete for all those jobs, you got to pay them more, and all that money, more money gets pushed out to the labor force, more money gets spent, inflation keeps on pushing up. Inflation, inflation, inflation. They think it's going to stick around. The Labor Department said last month's Consumer Price Index, which measures what consumers pay for goods and services, rose to 5.4% from this time last year. That's the same exact rate as we got in June and July of this year, as the economy reopened, says the Wall Street Journal, and slightly higher than in August. the stretch of higher inflation, which many economists now expect to linger. This is the Wall Street Journal's analysis here. And many economists now expect to linger is starting to have a broader impact on the overall cost of living, wages, and social benefits programs. So you notice the word that they're not using here in the Wall Street Journal, the word that's disappearing from the economic coverage. Have you heard it? Starts with a T. Transitory. I'm not seeing it anymore. The Wall Street Journal's not treating this as transitory anymore. The idea that, well, we would just get a big jump in inflation, then everything's going to return back to earth. This is normal. It'll shake out. A bit of a slinky effect, but in the end, it'll all settle in. This is transitory. Not anymore. The Wall Street Journal says economists now expect this higher inflation is going to linger. The Social Security Administration saying today that this inflation is going to trigger a big jump in Social Security benefits for seniors and other Americans, a 5.9% jump. Now, you may be a Social Security recipient. I might think, okay, good. Well, that's good. I'm glad I'm getting an adjustment. But the reality is here, that's just barely keeping pace with inflation. And also, it's a little bit higher than inflation, so the effect of that will be to be even more inflationary, right? More cash being printed, more cash being pushed out, more cash in the economy, less value in terms of the actual dollars you have in your bank account. You know, if you're playing a game of Monopoly and the banker, you know, has handed out $5 to each person, then all of a sudden each person now has $100 in front of them because the banker keeps handing out more cash. Well, then what you're paying for all these products starts skyrocketing because there's an arms race going on. And so that $5 is not as valuable as it once was. Not at all. It's worthless now. Social Security taxes are going to be increased for high-wage workers, they say. Last week, the Labor Department said employers increased wages in September by 4.6% compared with a year ago. Again, wages have only gone up 4.6%. Inflation up 5.4%. Now, where are we feeling all of this? We're feeling it in a ton of places. Heather Long, economic journalist, reporting this today. Rental cars, 43% higher than last September. It's now 43% more expensive to rent a car. Gas is up 42%. That's the one that everybody can feel and see immediately, right? Because, like, we have a giant advertisement for it. As you drive down the street and you see these gas stations and you see gas prices up on the side of the road, you have an obvious sense of where these things are headed. And then even worse, when you actually pull into that gas station and fill up, you can see that all of a sudden, you know, 42% jump in gas. That's a gigantic deal. You know what you were paying a year ago for a gallon of gas to fill up your tank, and how much more expensive it is now. Used cars. Who does this hurt? If used cars go up 24%, which part of the population gets hit the hardest? People who buy used cars. People who can only afford used cars. Used cars are up 24%. Bacon, 19%. Hotels, 18%. Beef, 18%. Pork, 13%. Eggs, 13%. TVs, all these consumer electronics are up, 13%. Covering your kids' toes in shoes is now 12% more costly. Your furniture, should you ever get it, is 11% more expensive. Have you tried purchasing furniture lately? Especially if you use the internet. Even if you don't, if you walk into a furniture store right now and you try and purchase furniture, not an enjoyable experience for me. I don't like furniture shopping. But if you do that, how long is it taking for them to deliver now? It's like 6 months. It's incredible how long it's taking. New cars are up. Here's the new car price, just 9%, but new cars are up, and that's a lot of money to buy a new car, 9% up. Chicken, 8%. Apples, 8%. Apples. We grow apples, don't we? In America, they're up 8%. Restaurant prices, 5% higher. Electricity is 5%. Rent, 2.9%. So in other words, like all that, the so-called wage increases that people were getting were nothing of the kind. Oh, look, you're making 4.6% more than last year. Uh-huh. My gas is 42% higher. How does that work out for me? Let me do a little napkin math. Oh, I'm losing. I'm losing. Thanks, Joe Biden. And then Joe comes along and he's like, I've got the solution for you. I'm going to fix things.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
All right, let's get Jason in Kensington in here. Always good to talk to Jason. Jason, good afternoon. We're talking inflation today.
G'day, Vince. How you going, mate?
Doing well.
Yeah, I mean, this is just becoming beyond annoying. I mean, this administration seems like it's just basically creating these problems to sort of solve them and then say, you know what, look what we did and give us a pat on the back. It's like, because no one calls them out when they screw up anyway. The media's not doing nothing. So they figure, well, you know what, we just do what we do, and then when we get in trouble, we'll solve it. We'll look good.
That's right. In fact, it takes about, let's see, 8 paragraphs until the New York Times admits that the administration is partly responsible for the supply chain disruptions.
I know. I mean, it's no one else. I mean, who else could it be?
Right.
I mean, it's insane. This is just nuts. Jason, I mean,
yeah, yeah. Thank crazy. You. No, you're exactly right. I mean, it is. It's not, again, like I said, it's like a movie villain, comic book villain. It's like, oh, I've got the solution to the problem. Well, who created the problem? Same guy. Same guy created it. Let's get Carol and Bowie in here. Carol, good afternoon. Oh, don't tell me she hung up. Oh, that's too bad. All right, let's get Patrick in Loudoun County in here. Patrick, good afternoon.
Vince, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Hey, couple quick things. We're getting taxed more on our used vehicles at home. The property taxes, they're taxing us more because they're claiming our vehicles went up in value.
Right, right. Yeah, so no matter, you're getting hit in every direction.
Both directions. Mm-hmm. And you can't just not pay that. You're going to get a 10% fine on top of it. And quick thing, Larry, Vince, I'm in logistics. There's no one even manning the airports at the cargo facilities to pick up packages.
Yeah. So that whole, like, let's keep everything open longer, it doesn't really matter if you don't have the labor to support it.
Correct. What's going on?
Joe Biden's a disaster is what's going on. And I think every day is further proof of that. And meanwhile, the rest of us are poorer. The most vulnerable in our country hit the hardest. Thanks, Democrats. Coming up next, we're going to chat with Selena Zito about our school boards and the way Democrats are screwing those up, too. 329.
Now, from the WMAL WynnBET Studios, Vince Colonnais.
Well, how about that? Biden wrapped up that statement today about the ports and took exactly zero questions, turned his back as reporters shouted, will people get their Christmas presents on time? What are you going to do about gas prices? No answer. People are officially poorer right now than they were at this time last year. The president of the United States taking no questions. Coming up, 4 o'clock, Harry Jackson, Fairfax County parent, will join us. We'll talk about the chaos in Fairfax County and how it's led to a bipartisan coalition of parents who are upset with the school district there and want to take it back for their kids. 4:30, Sean Higgins joins us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We will talk about inflation and the delays to get goods to you. And then at 5 o'clock, Mark Morgan is here, the former acting commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, as we talk about this border crisis. That's ongoing as well. In the meantime, let's get back to school boards. In Loudoun County, a lot of angry parents showing up last night to express their frustration with the multiple sexual assaults that have now taken place in Loudoun County, at least two apparently at the hands of the same male individual who is in these schools. Listen to this from the parents.
You guys failed. Sexual assaults happening in public schools is inexcusable and should never happen.
How do you expect parents across this county to drop their children off at school and trust you all to keep them safe when you have shown on more than one occasion you are not up for the job?
Yeah, it's a big deal. A lot of righteous indignation out there. More on that story as we get throughout the show. But for now, let's bring in Selena Zito, national political reporter and columnist for the Washington Examiner, as well as a weekly columnist for the great New York Post. Selena, nice to talk to you.
Hey there. Nice to talk to you as well.
These parents are showing up and they're not going away. I think that a lot of these school boards, Selena, were hoping that the summer would lead to a cooling off period and that they could go back about their business without the public being interested in how it's conducted. Not true.
No, absolutely not. So I think what happened, what sort of where the grains of this started, was when the pandemic began in 2020, and parents, you know, all of a sudden parents had their children at home, and they began to understand more. You know, parents are occupied with a lot of things during the day. They're either their job or other children at home or all kinds of other responsibilities, maybe with elderly parents. And they didn't really have an in-depth understanding of sort of how much control not only does a school board have over your children's education, but also a teacher's union. And they became quite educated over that once they had their children at home, and they took a first look, second look, fourth look at what their children had been taught. And they're like, whoa, wait a minute, what the heck have I been? You're doing what? Are you kidding me? And so sometimes a really bad thing can turn out to be a very enlightening thing. I call this moment an awakening, where parents are becoming very aware of all the influences and power and impact these boards have. People that they place in that office by voting and may have not thought about when that vote, when they cast it a year ago, or not something they're going to ever forget again, because education is not going to be viewed the same way ever again.
How far-reaching is this? We obviously talk about it a lot here in our area, Northern Virginia, the scene of so much drama as parents confront these school boards, including in places like Loudoun and Fairfax County. Are school boards across the country now receiving this kind of fresh scrutiny?
Absolutely. So school boards, as I write in my story, and if people want to check my work out, they can just go to selenevito.com. But I write in my story that this is happening across the country. We hear more about it in Northern Virginia, mainly because it's access and proximity to national press, right? You're across the way from, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, but also Fox News, CNN. It gives it a greater reach. Yet these are happening all across the country, and school boards have always been this sort of emotional place, as the same with town hall meetings. But, you know, because you're always talking about either your children's education and or raising taxes. So they've always been sort of a little rambunctious. But now they've taken on a heightened sort of attention from the national news because the issues at hand are issues that are important to the new Biden administration. And voters in Northern Virginia, who are not by any stretch of the means your traditional Trump voters, are saying, whoa, wait. Put the brakes on. We can't be doing this to our children.
Yeah, we see that effect reflected in sort of the political conversation right now between Terry McAuliffe and Glenn Youngkin, the Democrat and Republican candidates for governor in Virginia. I just got a mailer this week in Virginia from Glenn Youngkin emphasizing Terry McAuliffe's recent statements where he said that parents shouldn't be involved in their child's education, that this should simply be left to the school boards and the teachers unions. Obviously, that's by implication saying that. But a real gaffe on the part of Terry McAuliffe that's blowing up in his face. Because, Selena, it seems like what this is really coming down to is a debate about the citizen's relationship with his government. So how much influence do we have as parents over what our kids are taught versus our government saying that, you know, we'll take care of educating your children. You're in no position to even do that.
Right. In a moment of crisis, let's think back to in history to the Great Depression, World War II, 9/11, and this pandemic, and as well as the Great Recession of 2008. Government steps in ways that are supposed to at least get us from one point to another so that we're okay. However, the problem becomes that government's like, oh, wait a minute, we've got a lot of power here. And that power means we have votes. Let's just keep giving people things. And for a while, people will, either because of need or fear, accept that assistance from the government. But at some point, they realize they're giving something away, something that is very sort of built into our DNA. And that's liberty and freedom. And while those sound like cliche words to use, they're actually something that is very, whether you have been a citizen of this country for 9 generations or you just became a U.S. citizen, there's almost something that happens in our biological makeup that makes us, you know, understand that freedom is really important, but it's also something to stand up for.
Yes, the phrases, I'm a taxpayer and you work for me, used to mean something, and now it seems like we've inverted the relationship entirely. Go ahead.
True.
Go ahead, Selena.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
You know, I'm looking at these school boards, and what's interesting about it is how they seem to move in concert across the country. There's a lot of radical stuff being pushed, whether it's on issues around race or transgenderism or pushing in alternative histories of the United States. It all seems to happen, you know, in unison. Like, they're kind of all moving together, which suggests to me that it's not these individual school boards who are making decisions like that, but instead some sort of web of left-wing nonprofits who have been able to invade these school boards and advance their propaganda. What do we know about the forces behind why our school boards are changing nationwide?
Well, there's been a lot of investment by special interest groups to run candidates that align with their beliefs. Look, one of the things that I think that my profession really missed about 2020 is that the results of 2020 told us anything, it's that we are a center-right country. Joe Biden barely won the office of the presidency. The U.S. Senate is split down the middle. Technically, there really isn't someone who has a majority. And the Democrats lost 14 seats they weren't supposed to lose and hold a handful of seat majority. The country moved to the right down ballot. It also moved to the right in local elections, in state house races and state senate races. But for whatever reason, my profession and the Democrats were like, oh, we'll go with this. We're writing the story about this Democrat mandate. Well, there isn't a mandate. Voters always tell us, tell Washington a message with their vote, and every single time Washington misreads it and thinks, oh, you like us now, meaning the Democrats,
yes,
meaning in this wave election, when in fact, that's the opposite of what they were telling them. They took seats away from them. They didn't give them a large majority, and down ballot, there's more Republicans won than Democrats in the most important seats that impact our lives, which are state senators, state house members, county executives. So we are still center-right, and I think that's why you're seeing this conflict bubble up, because these school boards thought that they could do whatever they want because they were part of this mandate. However, they are learning just because a suburban voter chose voted for Joe Biden doesn't mean they love Joe Biden. Likely, it meant they didn't vote. They just didn't like Donald Trump, and they were voting for normalcy. And implementing CRT is the least normal thing to do to a child.
Yeah, no, I think there's this. I think there's kind of two schools of thought among Democrats, if I've detected them correctly. One is kind of this delusional Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez campus radical attitude, where they mislead themselves into thinking that people are all obsessed with climate change, transgender bathrooms, referring to people as Latinx and all this bizarre identity stuff. And then there's the other Democrats who are keenly aware that the public shares nothing with them culturally. And they realize that the window...
Yeah, that would be Joe Manchin.
There's that. But what I mean by that is... what I agree that Joe Manchin, for sure. But it's like Nancy Pelosi knows. And what I mean by that is that right now, you see Democrats think that they only have a very small window, because it's true, to pursue radical overhauls to our entire system, whether it's our election system or border, whatever it is, in order to ensure long-term power for themselves. Because they realize, like, that the people who live in this country are not really on board with them at all. And so their window is very tight.
I would argue that their window is non-existent. I would argue that we're more likely to see the $1.2 trillion rather than the $3.8 trillion or whatever the crazy number was.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing you can do as a governing majority is to overreach. And they have overreached since the day they decided to close the pipelines. And they decided to stop the hydraulic fracturing on federal land. They're already, I heard a Reuters report just as I was about to get on the air with you about the Biden administration now reaching out to those entities to produce fuel because we need it.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's remarkable. I mean, just on a broader level. I can't name a single thing that the Biden administration has done that's going well. I mean, everything is headed south. You know, a publication you write for, the New York Post, earlier this week, writing extensively about the editorial board, writing about how the entire cabinet, top to bottom, just look at who's in there. Janet Yellen arguing that it's totally just to be examining the bank accounts of people who move $600. You've got Merrick Garland, who's pursuing parents as if they are domestic terrorists for speaking up at school board meetings. Pete Buttigieg has disappeared. Who knows where that guy is in the midst of this massive supply chain crisis. And Kamala Harris pretends like she solved the border by going to Guatemala and doing nothing. This is, I would say, Selena Zito, a disaster from top to bottom.
Yeah. I have been writing about the supply chain problem since March. If your listeners aren't familiar with how I report, I don't, first of all, live in Washington or New York. I live in Western Pennsylvania. I don't fly and I don't take interstates. I take back roads.
Yeah.
So that I can see the connectivity between small towns and large towns and see who's doing well and who's not. And there has been, this problem began very granularly, but it was there. And all, it's like this week, all of a sudden, everyone's like, hey, you guys, we have a supply problem. The problem, I think, with the Biden administration, it is almost as if, now this is just not, it's not, this is how it appears, it's not what it is, but it's almost as if Joe Biden wanted to become president, and then after that, he really didn't care. And I don't, and while people talk about, he's not all there, whatever, I think it's something actually worse than that. I think he's in, and I wrote a piece about this. I think his presidency has been, and himself as president has been very negligent, whether it was at the border, whether it was how the Border Patrol agents were treated, in particular on Afghanistan,
yeah,
but also on our energy supply. And it is all of these things combined have had this impact throughout everything that we do, absolutely everything that we do.
Yes, negligent seems like the right word. And he's turning this into a negligent homicide of a country, unfortunately. And hopefully we can turn it around before it gets too late. Selena Zito from The Washington Examiner, thank you. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. If people want to check it out, just go to SelenaZito.com.
SelenaZito.com. She does so much. We're grateful for your time. Thank you, Selena.
Thank you.
Right. WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Yeah, I'll bring you updates on what's going on in Loudoun County coming up in this next hour. Also in Fairfax County, parents all taking on the school boards. Their indignation is righteous. But right now we're also talking inflation. Got a number of your calls on the subject. Let's get Audrey in Virginia in here. Line 3. Audrey, good afternoon. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Great, Audrey.
Okay. I'm a senior citizen. I'm going to make this very brief. I have not been hurt with the COVID financially. I get my Social Security. I have a really good retirement. And I am really upset that Social Security retirees are going to get such a huge, almost 5% increase while our grandkids are suffering.
Yeah, the Social Security Administration said today that the inflation, the 5.4% inflation, is going to lead to a 5.9% increase in Social Security benefits. You're saying, I don't want the increase. I want my kids not, my grandkids not to have to struggle under the weight of all of this debt and inflation.
Right, absolutely. And with the COVID, anytime if I go to a restaurant or wherever, I don't give them a 20% tip. I give these poor people 30, 40, 50% tip. I mean, they've been hurt.
Yeah, God bless you. I felt the same way, especially last year.
And I think, and anybody who's in that same situation, I would urge them to do the same thing. Be generous with people who have been hurt.
Amen. Thank you, Audrey. You're inspiring us today. You're a good person. Thank you very much. Nick is in Purcellville calling in here. Nick, good afternoon.
Hey, Vince. Nobody's talked about the $300 a month per child tax credit, which they're giving out checks. It's fake because it's not a tax credit. You have to earn money to get the credit and file that on your taxes. So what they're doing is giving out these checks before the midterms so that they could buy some votes. And my my congressperson has sent me an email saying, what are you doing with the $300 a month? And she'd like to use it in her campaign.
Really? So she's asking you to help join her advertising because look how generous I'm being. I'm giving you money.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the end result of this, Nick, I saw the polling on this recently. The Biden administration is getting no credit for any of this. Like, nobody's even thinking, oh, I should support Joe Biden because of this. Everyone's like, yeah, whatever. And so the Biden administration is wondering why they're not getting credit. They're upset about this. And simultaneously, all it's leading to is more inflation.
Absolutely. It's just a scheme.
Yeah. And it's hurting all of us. It's raising, in the end, it's raising taxes. Kids are a great thing. We need more kids. We need more people having children. We need to be able to support families. But you don't support families if you make their money worthless. That doesn't help anybody. Forget families. Everybody is hurt by that. And the Biden administration center stage and hurting so many Americans with these programs and then demanding for you to like them. Why don't you appreciate us? Well, you've done the exact opposite. You've earned our ire. 4 o'clock.
WMAL salutes our listeners in Lovettsville. Thanks for listening in Lovettsville and throughout the DMV to WMAL. Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Cominace.
Well, good afternoon to you. 407 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up today, Sean Higgins will be with us at 4:30 from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about all these supply chain disruptions, people leaving the workforce, crazy inflation, gas prices through the roof. How do we navigate it? Sean joins us at the bottom of this hour to explain. Then top of the next hour, 5 o'clock, Mark Morgan is here, former acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, as the border crisis, keeps getting worse. You see that Fox News reported that we've released ridiculous numbers of illegal immigrants into the United States, and they were able to find that out through secrets being handed off to them. More details ahead on that subject. The administration not being forthcoming. They had to get it out through a leak. But right now, let's take things to Fairfax County, Virginia, and the way that parents there are confronting that school board. A lot of attention paid to Loudoun County, and justifiably so lately, but Fairfax County deserves its fair share of attention as well. This past week, a father who's been on this program before, been on this station before, named Harry Jackson, confronted the school board, and let's talk to him now about what he's upset about with Fairfax County and whether or not he thinks it's going to change. Harry Jackson, great to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me back, man.
What's keeping you going to these school board meetings, sir?
What's keeping me going? Well, it's nothing good. They just keep on. I mean, first it was critical race theory teaching us to hate white people and ourselves, and now it's pushing pedophilia to our children and grooming, creating an environment where they're grooming kids for pedophiles.
Yes, these books these awful books that included scenes of pedophilia in them. Parents rightly outraged about it. What have you heard from Fairfax County about all of this?
Well, from what I heard from Fairfax County, what was the concern was that they initially pulled the books, but instead of just saying, okay, a reasonable person would assume, they made a mistake in the review process and they'll refine it or make improvements. Instead, they decided to just double down. There was a protest outside the school board in favor of the books. There were parents that were making speeches to the school board lying about what was in the books. We actually had blow-up images that we were actually able to show to the media while we were there that showed that, you know, what they were saying was not correct or accurate or an accurate representation. And I still think that we still haven't heard from the school board whether or not, you know, they're going to correct this with other books, because which is at the tip of the iceberg, because from what I understand, like, there's pornographic material on both the heterosexual and on the LGBTQ material.
Yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. And by the way, this is where I just throw down a trigger warning for the audience. But I mean, it is graphic. You've got at least one of the scenes in one of the books involves a sexual relationship between an adult man and a juvenile boy, right?
That is correct. There's a depiction there of sex between a grown man and a boy. About 10 or 11, and if you blow out the image, it'll show that there's an older teenage boy where it's having a fantasy about that type of interaction and being portrayed as normal or acceptable.
And so parents not informed of any of this, and then so when you and other parents go and basically read this out to the Fairfax County School Board, the school board itself is scandalized by, oh my gosh, this language is too graphic. Oh really? If it's too graphic for you, then why is it okay for the kids?
I would agree. And then not only that, but why does Terry McAuliffe think that parents shouldn't be able to take books off of the library shelves that have that type of material?
Yes.
That normalized pedophilia.
Yeah, it's outrageous. I saw a write-up about you this past week by William McGurn over in the Wall Street Journal, headlined, "Virginia Dad Takes on the School Board." And there's a picture of you. It's a great photo. And on it, you say, "Parents are not domestic terrorists." What did you think of that National School Board Association letter and then subsequently that Justice Department initiative that announced that Merrick Garland and the team over at the Justice Department were going to begin investigating parents like you who dissent at these school board meetings?
Well, it's absolutely absurd, because the National School Board Association couldn't cite any specific incident that would even come close to the rise to the level of terror of being a terrorist act. And furthermore, what they're deeming as a terrorist act is simply being criticized. So they're trying to really silence conversation. They're trying to silence concerned parents that see things like pedophilia in their school libraries, or if they're having other controversial topics such as critical race theory being peddled to our children as under the guise of social emotional learning.
The media constantly frames all of this as just a bunch of angry white conservatives who are upset at these school boards. They, of course, frame everything in racial terms and suggest these are just Trump supporters who are mad, and so therefore they should be disregarded. Tell me about the coalition you've built in Fairfax County and what they're saying to the school board.
Well, it doesn't fit their narrative. Our members are overwhelmingly Democrat. We're overwhelmingly persons of color. And I've even seen, I think in Media Matters, someone tried to characterize me as a GOP activist, which I'm not. I mean, I'm an educational activist. I've been involved in education, for Fairfax County Association of the Gifted as a board member for the past, 10 years ago. I am a parent within the area. Our coalition, we're just parents that are from all different walks of life that are concerned. First of all, it was about the attack on meritocracy and the changes to the TJ admissions process, where they moved from merit-based to a racial quota system, and where they used geography as a means of a racial quota. And a lot of parents have taken the school board to court over that.
Yes. The majority of your members, you say, are Democrats. What describe, if you will, what they're upset about. Is it is the meritocracy thing is big, obviously. Thomas Jefferson's School of Science and Technology, which had a rigorous admissions process, has changed to a lottery system in order to make it so that fewer Asian students gain admission. That was the goal. And interestingly, the effect of it was actually to increase the number of white students that gained admission in this topsy-turvy, equity-driven world. But what are the Democrats, who you are aligned with, saying about all of this?
We're aligned with most of it. We're all moderate. We just think that the Democratic Party has just purged all the moderates from its party. It's just gone too far to the left. And, you know, and education is a bipartisan issue. The Republican, the GOP has embraced, for the most part, our cause and, believe what we believe as far as if you work hard, you get ahead and have a meritocracy and things should be race blind. And the reason why, and getting rid of the admissions process will only remove a metric that will show inequities within the pipeline. It shows where the problems are. And now the school board is trying to cover up its own inadequacies with a Band-Aid by trying to implement a proprietary process that they can't share with the public on how candidates are selected. We know how candidates are selected because every demographic group, except the Asian demographic, was negatively impacted. And the admissions process change was specifically targeted with surgical precision, targeting the Asian community. And I'll go back to the merit lottery system that they first proposed. That was targeting students that went to Rachel Carson and Rocky Run, predominantly Asian, and limiting by regional pathway, no less, not countywide, but by regional pathway, by lumping all the top-performing schools into one single region and then limiting how many of those students could gain admission to the school. All of those students that go into advanced academic programs. It was a travesty, and it would have made CJ a majority white school. Fortunately, that didn't pass, but now what we have isn't much better. It's a quota-based system from each school, including those that are not in the advanced academic program, and it even hurts the minority representation at the school because you have kids that are coming from non-academic, advanced academic programs that may not be prepared for the rigors of Thomas Jefferson.
It's such grotesque silliness to judge people on their skin color, not on their merit. But that's what's happening there in Fairfax County. Number one school in the country. And they said, you know what we should do? We should mess it up. We should mess up such a great school. Harry Jackson, thank you for joining us today and for fighting the good fight there in Fairfax County. Really appreciate you, sir.
Thank you.
Right. Let's get Liz in here from Washington, D.C. Liz, good afternoon.
Hi. I was kind of a tiger mom, and my kids wound up at Thomas Jefferson and did well afterwards. But they had the luxury of a mother who really was able to stay home, was able to teach them to read before they went into kindergarten,
yeah,
who slept them to all kinds of enrichment activities. I mean, it is so unfair to take a kid who went to an ordinary Fairfax County school or I don't know how to express it, but you need to catch these kids very early and you need to enrich their curriculum. We spent a couple of years in Texas, and if I hadn't pushed the school board there to let my kids take pre-algebra in seventh grade, they would never have gotten into Thomas Jefferson.
In other words, you need to fix the areas that are falling short rather than to debilitate the places that are succeeding. And that's what happened at TJ. They decided, we're going to wreck a good thing instead of fixing the bad things that are hurting certain kids from being able to get into this school. Kids with the capabilities to do it, or just you know getting terrible educations before they have a chance to even get an admission to TJ. So they don't want to fix the bad stuff in the pipeline. They just want to ruin the good stuff to bring everybody down to size.
Exactly. They need to start in kindergarten and first grade and enrich the kids,
yeah,
and just give them a better foundation.
Amen. Thank you, Liz. It's a smart point. And of course, these administrators, school boards, they ignore all of that. To them, equity means, tearing down successful students and rather than lifting up the ones who need help. And so that would be called equality. That's what we used to refer to that as. All right. Let's get into Loudoun County here. Luke Rosiak over at the Daily Wire was on with Tucker Carlson last night on the Fox News Channel and had this excellent summary of what's actually happening in Loudoun County right now. Let's play this if we can. Here you go.
Yes, this story is one of the most disturbing I've ever worked on. It raises the possibility that the Loudoun County Public Schools covered up the rape of a 14-year-old girl at the hands of a boy wearing a skirt in order to pass a school policy that Democrats were adamant about passing. And as a result of concealing that, a second girl was raped last week. And to prevent all of this from coming out, potentially, they arrested the father of the victim, tried to put him in jail, and he's now the face of domestic terrorism.
Yes, that's right. So first of all, excellent reporting by Luke Rosiak. And now a lot of places covering this nationwide. Scott Smith is the father. Scott Smith is the father who was placed in handcuffs, bloodied by the Loudoun County Sheriff's Department and dragged out on June 22nd of this year. He wanted to express at that meeting that his daughter had been raped in a high school bathroom in Loudoun County on May 28th, less than a month prior to that school board meeting. What were they debating? Transgender policies in Loudoun County. And so the father had a story worth telling in that environment. And if Scott Smith had the ability to express himself, to declare that his daughter had been sexually assaulted by a boy wearing a skirt inside the girls' room in a Loudoun County high school, would that school board have passed that transgender policy? The answer is no, they wouldn't have. The most leftist person in the world wouldn't have been able to vote for that policy, at least not at that moment, if that father had a chance to express himself. But he didn't. And instead, they demonized him. They dragged him out in handcuffs, bloodied him up. And then from there, Buddha Bibaraj, the Commonwealth's attorney, paid for by George Soros in Loudoun County, pursued him. She pursued a fine for him and sought to get him anger management training. Anger management training. His daughter was sexually assaulted in a bathroom in Loudoun County, and he went in to tell that story. And Buddha Bibaraj, this disgusting human being, sought to seek anger management training for him. And then that father, he's been quiet because he's been getting advice from his attorneys that he needed to be, to not express himself in public, that maybe this would help his daughter's case against this boy. And the boy, we are told, was then shuffled to another high school in Loudoun County where he sexually assaulted yet another girl, allegedly, inside of a classroom, pulled her into a classroom and sexually assaulted her last week. And so now there are two sexual assault cases. Now, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Department says that they immediately arrested him now, this time, but that previously there was an investigation going on. And that's where the school board is hiding right now. The Loudoun County School Board releasing a statement today indicating that, they're aware of the media reports of all of this, but, you know, that they weren't told about this. And normally you wait to find out what law enforcement's doing before they're able to handle any of it. The school itself knew about it. The principal obviously knew about it, but they were withholding any sort of interviews themselves until law enforcement was done with the case. And in the meantime, it appears, allegedly, that this boy has sexually assaulted now two young ladies. Now two. And you've got Scott Ziegler Braybrand from Fairfax County. You got Ziegler in Loudoun County, the superintendent of schools, who on June 22nd denied that there had been any assaults inside of bathrooms in Loudoun County. Here's what he said.
And I'm not sure who can answer this. Do we have assaults in our bathrooms, or our locker rooms? Regularly?
It happened less than a month before.
I would hope not, but I would like clarification.
To my knowledge, we don't have any records of assaults occurring in our restroom.
Okay, so now everyone's saying they had no idea. Everyone's saying they had no idea. The Loudoun County School Board saying we didn't know anything. Ziegler, back on June 22nd, claims he didn't know anything. Haven't heard anything from Ziegler lately. Where the heck is this guy? So either he's completely incompetent, is running a horrifically managed system where the superintendent isn't made aware of a rape that takes place inside of a girl's room in a high school in his system, or he knew and he lied because he was trying to advance a radical transgender policy and he knew that the truth, where children are being abused, was inconvenient to him achieving his ends.
WMAL.
Leroy is in Arlington. Leroy, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colonnais Show.
Hey, I love your show, Vince. Miss you in the mornings. Listen every afternoon.
Thank you, sir. Simple thing.
If they didn't know anything, why did they move the kid?
That's right. It's a great point. Game, set, match. I mean, that means they're lying. I mean, they moved this kid to another high school where he is now allegedly and again, this is all according to the father who found out via his attorney that they've let on here that, yes, it was the same kid, the same boy who sexually assaulted now multiple girls in Loudoun County high schools. So the superintendent would be obviously keenly aware that they were shuffling.
That would go all the way up to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would go, moving a student like that would be, you know, transferring from one school to another is very difficult.
Yeah.
They don't just do that.
It's
so why did they move the kid?
Leroy, thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you.
We've got a lot more ahead. I see all your calls coming in. I want to take them. The clock constraining me. That's all right. We've got to talk about this supply chain disruption we've got going on in America. It's making us all poorer. Inflation going up. Wages aren't even keeping up. The Biden administration causing it, coming in, pretending like they've got the solution now. Sean Higgins joins us on the other side of the news to explain what the heck is going on.
Now, from the WMAL WynnBET Studios, Vince Colonnais.
We really sent William Shatner into space, huh? Did he come back? He came back? Oh, okay. 436 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, 5 o'clock, Mark Morgan is with us, the former acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner and a visiting fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation. Mark will tell us where the border crisis has moved. Yes, it moves around, and it continues. The details ahead. But right now we're looking at massive inflation going on year to year, 5.4% jump. That's outpacing the rise in wages, 4.6%, which means, of course, that you are poorer now than you were last year, this time last year. And in the midst of all of this, part of the reason this is happening is we have massive supply chain disruptions. President Biden coming out today claiming he's going to help fix those by getting an L.A. port to be open 24/7 for a while. But will that resolve this? And what role did the Biden administration play in the first place in driving up all this inflation? Let's ask Sean Higgins, research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, who specializes in labor and employment issues. Sean, good afternoon to you.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, sir. What are you thinking as you're watching all of these economic conversations today coming out of the White House?
Yeah, I mean, they're always a little bit or even more than a little bit behind the curve on these type of things. I mean, the supply chain problem has been bubbling for several months now. So if anything was going to be done, it should have been done, you know, back in early summer at least.
Give me a basic explainer on why we have so many cargo ships waiting to deliver products. So they have all of the products sitting on the ships, but they can't get it out and into the country. What's causing that?
Well, the whole supply chain is very sort of fragmented, and one of the problems you have is when something gets sort of out of whack, then it causes cascading problems down the line, and these things build on each other. In this case, the big thing that happened was simply the COVID crisis. A lot of people simply weren't working in the ports because they had to stay home. There's a lot of quarantining of ships. They had to come up with new safety procedures, and all that just slowed everything down. On top of that, the ports just aren't open 24/7 in the U.S., and as a consequence, that created delays. They had delays in sort of getting the cargo containers empty, and then the cargo containers began to pile up because there weren't enough truckers coming in to do that. Then the ships at sea ran short of cargo containers because they're all stuck at the ports. We don't have enough truckers to get to move this stuff around. One of the reasons why we don't have enough truckers is because it's hard to get into the trucking business, harder to get into the trucking business these days than it used to be because trucks have gotten more expensive. Why have they gotten more expensive? Because we're not getting as much material shipped in from overseas to the places that manufacture the trucks. The prices have gone up. And you see how this stuff just sort of starts compounding each other.
We saw that the Biden administration admitted in a phone call yesterday that the $1.9 trillion in cash that was shot out of cannons into the U.S. economy in March by the Biden administration, they believe was at least partly responsible for the supply chain disruptions we're seeing. What role do you think that government, really just printing money has played in creating this slowness in the supply chain?
Well, I mean, there's just been compounding all the problems I just mentioned. I mean, there's an increase in demand. More and more people are buying stuff online and ordering and getting it delivered than ever before. And as a consequence, that increased the demand at the same time that they were having trouble getting the supply moved.
Mm-hmm.
So that just, again, these problems sort of compound each other. In the past, increasing, people's purchasing power has just been one of the simplest and easiest ways to get a quick sort of sugar spike into the economy. They didn't take into account the other problems the economy was having, and as a consequence, the sugar spike is causing diabetic complications.
Sure. And now we're seeing some economists, including over at the Wall Street Journal, believe that inflation, that big number we're seeing, is expected to stay around for a while. We've been hearing for months from places, to include the Federal Reserve, that it would merely be, quote, transitory. Do you expect all of this to shake out anytime soon?
I certainly think it's possible we're going to see a spike in inflation that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, you have to remember, inflation's been very low by historical standards for the last decade, 2 decades or so. But now we have a rapid increase in demand at a time when there's a lot scarcer commodities to get. So, and that's the classic cause of inflation. I mean, money chasing too few goods.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what can be done? I mean, is there anything that can be done right now to relieve these supply chain issues? I was just thinking earlier this week, this may be a harebrained idea. What do I know? But maybe we call up the National Guard to start driving some of these trucks. Are there options available to us?
I wouldn't call in the National Guard just yet, but that's more sort of a matter of, I'm personally wary of getting military involved in these type of things.
Yeah.
We are seeing some of the other companies. We just sort of have to let the invisible hand of commerce address this type of stuff. What we're seeing is a lot of these big companies, the big retailers, the Walmarts, the Costcos, and the others, they're starting to not rely on contracting out the supply chain stuff, but getting into it themselves. They're chartering their own chips. They're getting their own trucks out there. They're doing more of the stuff on their own to get the goods that they need. And I think we'll see some of that, and that will alleviate some of the supply chain issues. Some of the things that can be done is they can roll back or relax the restrictions on the amount of hours that truckers can drive. They're only allowed to drive 11 hours out of a 14-hour period, and that just sort of slows things down. I mean,
yes.
The old days when truckers used to go coast to coast without ever sleeping. All those country western songs are a relic of the past. And obviously, we don't want the roads to become more dangerous, but clearly, there's probably something we can do to relax this and get more people out there. We can also try and to just simply prod the ports into getting to a 24/7 operation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different federal entities that have oversight on them. And while it's not something that's going to happen quickly or easily, because there's a lot of complicating factors and a lot of different people involved, but certainly if they make it a priority, it might start happening faster.
What about reshoring some of the supply chain to begin with? I mean, we're so dependent on manufacturing in Asia and other countries and these ports. Will this lead to any companies deciding that it'd be better to have their supply chain start and end in the United States?
I think you'll see that with some of the bigger companies that I mentioned before, and they're sort of looking for alternate ways to source materials. The problem is that some things just can't, at least at this time, be economically obtained in the U.S., at least in the way they were used to. So there'll be some sort of shakeouts along this line. But we'll certainly see more companies try and do that. There'll probably be more emphasis put on just North American production, not just the U.S., but Canada and Mexico, and getting it that way. So,
yeah, well, we could certainly use the jobs and a flourishing American manufacturing sector. I think that'd be a big deal. And maybe this, maybe the silver lining here is that we'll get some of that out of this. Sean Higgins from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Really nice to talk to you. Thank you for your perspective, sir.
Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. 4:44 now. All right, your call's coming in. We're talking about the supply chain disruptions. A lot of you our truck drivers who listen in. We appreciate you for doing that, and thanks for moving all these goods around. Jeremiah in Montrose, one of those people. Jeremiah, how are things?
Things are great. What's going on, Vince? How are we doing today?
Doing okay. What's your thoughts, sir?
All right. So I gotta preface all this and say, the people that work in the port, number one, they're union workers. Mm-hmm. I'm not a union proponent. I'm not a Teamster. But anyhow, the problem when stuff comes into the port, as Americans, we want to save a nickel, dime, a quarter, a dollar, whatever it be. When you transport cheap goods from China to America or whatever, it comes off the boat, and the people who have bought this cheap good, they're making profit. Well, they don't want to share that profit with the truck driver. Next to the farmer, I'm saying a step above the farmer, because the farmer definitely gets screwed in America. But anyway,
right.
Next to the farmer, the trucking industry is one of the most cutthroat industries. They don't want to pay us what it's worth to move freight, specifically our closest port, either Richmond or Baltimore. Mm-hmm. They don't want to pay no money to bring that stuff out. That's why all the tissue paper that we're missing, it's all sitting out there in the ocean. It's not coming from Maine like what it used to down to Maryland Tissue in Hagerstown. It's coming off of that barge coming up the Chesapeake River. It's sitting in Baltimore waiting to go get cut and wrapped up and shipped out to your local Costco.
Right.
This isn't a matter of Americans can't produce products. America doesn't want to pay the cost of the product, so they're willing to ship it across seas. You know, the demand across seas to furnish a product and bring it here, and all, you know, we'll save 13 cents per unit that way.
Right. And in the end, of course, devastate American manufacturing and jobs, and it's remarkable. I just wonder, Jeremiah, I'm hoping that, like, if there's any silver lining to this crushing delay in the supply chain, that maybe some companies can start to think seriously about, well, maybe it is worth it to reshore some of this American manufacturing.
I'm telling you, the place that I'm sitting in right now, I'm staring at everything made in China, including the steel.
That's right.
That these people use. It's sad.
It is sad.
Very
thank
sad.
You. Jeremiah, thank you for that perspective. I really appreciate it in your listenership. Let's get John in Bristow in here on line four. John, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Vince, having a great day today.
Good.
Listen, there's a problem that they're not really dealing with. 10 years ago, and I've been driving a school bus since I was 16. Back in those days, you could actually drive with 6 months of driving experience in the state of Virginia. I've been driving almost 50 years of my life a school bus.
Yes.
10 years ago from the DOT, we got a thing that said, look, the average age for commercial drivers, and this was 65%, are 60 years of age or older. You want to know why? Because we're not getting young people interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. They're not paying money. Same problem we're having in the school industry. We can't get school bus drivers. When I started, I was working for minimum wage local here at the old Giant department store. A lady came into the school and said, well, at the time I was making $2.65 an hour at Giant. She came in and they were offering $8 an hour, which is almost four times what I was making at Giant. I almost jumped out the window after her.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You're dealing with a situation. You got to decide what you want. If you want a quality driver, I don't care if it's one of the truckers on the road, and I love them dearly, or a school bus driver, or the guy's doing a dump truck gig. You got to pay the money. That's the problem.
That's right.
There isn't enough money. And the only reason I ever drove a school bus was for the benefits. And by the way, we love listening to you on my school bus every day.
Amen. Well, thank you for that, John. Yeah, I mean, and also, like, you know, stop telling kids that that's not a dignified job. Stop leading them, like, to college where they get saddled with ridiculous debt and then end up in careers where they can't afford to pay back that debt. That wasn't a good deal. Never was a good deal. And there's been a lot of that. It's like people have been driven away from good quality jobs that pay well, and there's a lot of dignity in that work. And you know, we've got just a ridiculous culture that pulls all these kids, the gravitational pull of this corrupt higher education system that leaves them with incredible debt and enriches these schools that prepare them for nothing other than to be little propagandists on behalf of the party. It's a broken system. And we're seeing it, warts and all, right now. fully exposed. What we do next, it's a big deal. As a country, we have to decide that. And it probably starts with throwing out some of the guys who are currently sitting in those leadership positions, the ones who caused this problem. Joe Biden didn't just start causing it by becoming president of the United States. Oh, no. He's been in Washington since the Stone Age. He's been a part of the decimation of American manufacturing, the offshoring of these goods, the destruction of the American economy for decades. And at some point, he should face the consequences. But for now, he's president of the United States. So let's figure out what we do next. 454.
Breaking news. The inside story on Washington's Mall. WMAL. Where Washington comes to talk.
These people are so corrupt. They're so abusive. They're complete clowns. New York Times headline, Biden administration plans wind farms along nearly the entire U.S. coastline. Oh, wonderful. Wind, that super efficient form of energy. Remember when Trump would joke about the wind farms? Like the fictional guy watching TV with his wife. And they're like trying to keep the TV going. And he's like, honey, the TV is off. Like, the wind has stopped blowing. That guy, he cracks me up, that Donald Trump. But he tapped into something real. It's like did you ever get the sense that the Biden administration is really excited for all the brownouts? You know, we're going to try and turn our air conditioners on in the summer and then power will collapse. Because you know what we really need to be? A third world country. Really looking forward to that. These people need to be stopped. 459.
WMAL salutes our listeners in Poolsville. Thanks for listening in Poolsville and throughout the DMV to WMAL. Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Cominés.
Good afternoon to you. 507 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. You can be a part of the program at 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL. Yeah, if they start building windmills on the East Coast, you got to start right outside Barack Obama's house at Martha's Vineyard, just right up against the coastline. So when he wakes up in the morning sipping his artisanal coffee, he's got to suffer by staring at all the dead seagulls that are flying around, landing in his yard. All right, let's talk about the actual chaos going on to the country. It's our border. Our border is out of control, as you know. But the problems shift up and down the border. And we're hearing reports now that in Arizona, illegal crossings have exploded. They're up more than 2,400%. From last year. Agents in that sector of the border, in the Yuma sector, have apprehended more than 1,000 illegal immigrants per day in the last month alone. For an update on what's happening, let's turn to former acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Mark Morgan. He's also a Heritage Visiting Fellow. Sir, great to have you back with us.
Vince, thanks for having me as always.
Give us a sense of the way the border crisis is going right now and how it seems to be shifting moment by moment to different sectors of the border.
Yeah, Vince, I think what you just said is the right way to describe it. It's out of control. And I think American people now are seeing that. I think Del Rio really brought that to light and brought the awareness to the American people that that's exactly what's happening. And as you mentioned, there's a shift. But look, this happens. This part is nothing new. When the smugglers and cartels exploit one area and then that area is closed a little bit, they're just going to shift right to the left. And that's what you're seeing in Yuma, Arizona. Look, if you take a look at Del Rio and McAllen, some of our areas, while there are additional resources being put in those areas, it's not coming from DHS. It's not coming from CBP. It's coming from the state of Texas and Governor Abbott and their National Guard and Texas DPS. And so the cartels are like, hey, let's just shift a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left. There's not as many law enforcement officers there, and we're going to continue to do what we're doing.
We're seeing also that the Department of Homeland Security this past week pulled the plug on contracts to put up more border wall in the Rio Grande Valley. And now there is so much border fencing that's just lying in the desert, rotting and rusting and not being assembled. All of this is money that the American people wasted. And then there's also video of illegal immigrants who are now walking just past the edge of whatever border wall was assembled. What are you thinking as you're seeing those images?
Yeah, Vince, you're spot on again. Look, there's about $100 million worth of materials just sitting there, as you said, rotting away. Up until the contracts were canceled in Laredo and RGB, the taxpayers were actually footing the bill for contracts to do nothing. Millions of dollars every single day, millions of dollars every single day to not build the wall. And I'm frustrated because this is a quintessential example of this is a purely a political decision. If you ask any border security expert that's been doing it for more than 5 minutes, they'll say the wall is part of a multi-layer strategy of infrastructure, technology, and personnel. When those three elements are put together in a strategic area, every single measure of success improves. It's a fact. It's data. It's not opinion. This administration has dismissed the fact, dismissed the data, dismissed reality, and dismissed the border security experts all in the name of politics. And then, because of that, because of canceling the wall contracts, our border is less secure and our country is less safe because of it.
Yes, and it's a perfect expression of the fact that they have no interest in securing the border. They have the options. The money's already been spent. The border wall is there. The guys are waiting to put it up, and they said no because they don't want to secure this border. They want to leave it vulnerable. In fact, we just got a leaked Border Patrol documents released to Fox News today that reveal that at least 160,000 illegal immigrants have been released into the United States since March alone, and that is just – that's on top of what we've already – we've heard just numbers reaching into the millions in terms of people who've been trying to get across our border. How does this moment compare to your career in trying to secure our border?
It's we're living in opposite universes, Vince. I mean, look, under the Trump administration, hey, love him or hate him, here's the facts, is that he handed off the most secure border in our lifetime. We developed a network of tools, authorities, and the policies that not only made our border more secure every day, but also specifically addressed the loopholes that were being exploited in our immigration system. He ended catch and release, and because – and a whole network of other policies, unprecedented cooperative agreement with Mexico and the Northern Triangle countries, I could go on and on. Because of all of those things, we saw an unprecedented decrease in illegal immigration and the improvement of border security along our southwest border. This administration has done the opposite. They've removed all of the tools and authorities and policies, and now what we have is an administration who is all about facilitating and actually assisting and incentivizing illegal immigration. And their whole goal is to actually release people
yes.
as fast as possible into this country.
And the Biden administration has now told law enforcement officials tasked with the immigration mission of the United States not to deport someone that they know is here illegally. 2 weeks ago, Alejandro Mayorkas, who runs the Department of Homeland Security, issued directives to immigration officers. This would be Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, saying that the fact that someone is an illegal immigrant, quote, should not alone be the basis of a decision to detain and deport them from the United States. In other words, ignoring the law and granting a de facto amnesty. Yesterday, we see Mark Morgan that Mayorkas expanded amnesty again. DHS has ordered a stop to all mass ICE worksite raids of illegal immigrants and will instead only target employers who hire illegals, but will not be deporting illegals who work as a part of these operations. This seems to me like just a de facto amnesty. We never passed any legislation, and now illegal immigration is given the thumbs up by the Biden administration.
Vince, I couldn't have said it better myself, right? It's very clear that these set of restrictions on ICE is part of a broader goal of Secretary Mayorkas, who really is the architect of our open border policies that we're seeing.
Mark Morgan, do we still have him? Let's see if that phone connection comes back. Oh, I hate when that happens. Don't you hate when that happens? Not a big fan of losing the guest right in the middle of a great response. One more time. Mark Morgan, is he there? No? Okay. All right, we'll see if we can't get him back on here in this remaining minute or so. But, you know, he's on a roll here talking about Mayorkas. And, like, Mayorkas, that guy... what a disaster that guy is. Mayorkas' name came up earlier this week. I was telling you back in 2015, that Inspector General's report comes out from the Department of Homeland Security. And what does it discover? It finds that Terry McAuliffe, remember Terry McAuliffe, former governor of Virginia, he leaves. He's not governor anymore. He goes to this green tech company. It's meant to be this electric car company. And instead, what it ended up being was just a giant scam in order to sell green cards to foreign nationals. The DHS Inspector General report finds out that it was Alejandro Mayorkas that was greasing the skids the whole time to give these green cards to Terry McAuliffe's clients. And now Mayorkas, of course, heads DHS. Mark Morgan, you were talking about Mayorkas just a moment ago as the architect of so much of this immigration chaos. Finish that point.
Yeah. So Vince, look, the secretary now, he's actually acting as a de facto legislator. I mean, you're exactly right. He is actually ignoring current immigration laws while he's simultaneously creating what essentially is the new law of the land for agents. He's actually creating law. He's circumventing the INA, the Immigration Nationality Act, and he's telling ICE now, no, even though the law says if you're illegal, you should be deported. No, I'm telling you as a secretary to ignore that. So now, Vince, as we talked about, you've got a welcoming center on the front end. Now, you illegally enter the United States as a family. You're going to be released into the interior United States. And then on the back end, we basically created sanctuary cities and de facto amnesty.
Yes.
Because now he's removed 90% of ICE's enforcement authority.
So when you become the Secretary of Homeland Security, you have to take the oath of office, right?
That's correct.
And so when you take the oath, presumably that means that you will enforce the laws. You will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office in which you are about to enter. Mayorkas not appearing to be following the oath that he took.
No, he's not. And, wow, I'm impressed. You have that down word for word. That's exactly what the oath says. And that's exactly right. And it really shows that he really is the Secretary of Homeland Insecurity, that he is more of an ideologue and that is following the kind of far left open border policies than he is following the law that he should as the secretary. Look, his personal ideology as the Secretary of Homeland Security should be irrelevant. But he's not. He's making that the forefront of all his decision. He's going against the border security experts. He's going against the law. And he's going against what is in America's best interest. Instead, he's going what's in the interest of every single illegal alien that enters the United States.
Yeah, and undermining the consent of the governed all the way through. Mark Morgan,
right.
Former acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner and Heritage Visiting Fellow. It's always really nice to talk to you. I appreciate your insight, sir.
You too, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Yeah, I do appreciate the compliment from Mark Morgan. He's like, boy, you knew the oath of office right off the top of your head. Yeah, no. One of the luxuries of doing radio is you can actually pull things up on a computer screen in front of you. Not as easy on television. Those guys, they just have to rely on their noggins. No, I just pulled up the oath of office, and I'm like, it sure looks like Mayorkas is violating the oath of office, which says, and then you read it. It's fascinating stuff. I have another immigration story for you. In addition to all the craziness that we just went through with the great Mark Morgan, Joe Biden is now opening up the border, both the southern. You're thinking to yourself, opening up the border? The border's already open. Yeah, bear with me. Opening up the Mexican and the Canadian borders for legal crossing. They've been shut down. You haven't been able to, if you're a foreign national coming from Mexico or Canada, you haven't really been able to get into the United States legally. So it's been closed legally. I love the charade that we're going through. Illegally, yeah, no, it's bajillions of people coming across the border. But legally, oh, sorry. If you have papers, you can't get across the border. But no papers, no problem. Come right in. I mean, you have people from Haiti who've been already refugees in Chile throwing their Chilean IDs down on the Mexican side of the border because they're like, look, if I got an ID card, the jig is up. I can't come in. So they throw their papers down and boom, they're right into the United States. And then they get to stay here. What a wonderful system we have. But Joe Biden this week announced, his administration announced, Joe doesn't announce anything. He reads teleprompters and people around him announce things. The administration announcing that they're lifting land border travel restrictions for fully vaccinated foreign nationals, fully vaccinated foreign nationals. So their passports will be vaccine passports beginning in early November, according to senior administration officials. The administration had previously announced updated guidelines for international travel in September as a part of an effort to begin reopening the country to foreign nationals, but offered no new information on changing the guidelines for the land border travel. Remember when they made the announcement, they're like, oh, you can fly in. They're like, but what about people walking in? What about people driving in? Because, you know, it's a little cheaper to do that, more expensive to fly in. Kind of sounds regressive. They're like, oh, we'll give you an update. Now they're saying, yes, you'll be able to travel into the United States via land. But you will be required to be wielding a vaccine passport. If you're a Canadian national and wants to come into the United States, you got to be fully vaccinated in order to come into this country. That's what we're doing. And no such requirement for illegal immigrants. Fully vaccinated? We're not even asking if they've had one shot. We're not checking anything. Right this way, sir. We've rolled out the red carpet for you. What kind of upside-down world have we entered where illegal foreign nationals get better treatment than U.S. citizens and legal foreign nationals? Legal foreign nationals. So again, you're not coming into the United States to stay. You may be doing some non-essential travel, want a vacation in New York City. You know, come in from Canada, you've got to be fully vaccinated. But if you cross the border and you don't have paperwork and you sneak and you cut through a fence or something, you're good. You don't need any proof of vaccination. And chances are you'll become a U.S. citizen actually at some point. So you know, weigh the options, either legal entry or illegal entry. One of them has a much better chance of you staying here forever and not having any medical requirements forced upon you.
I know you do, but
when the deceleration is happening slower, perhaps, than people expected a few months ago,
yeah,
and people are still paying 10 or 15 or 20% more for meat, and they're saying, why was it supposed to be transitory 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and we're still here, does that make things more difficult to explain as to why this is the case?
Well, it requires us explaining, and through working with all of you as well, that the cost of meat is also related to competition and
there we go. A market lecture from Circle Backy Jen Psaki. Really looking forward to this one. I'm sorry, let me lean my head into my hands and listen intently.
A number of large meat producers who have a dominance over the market. And the fact that a lot of these issues are not as simple as a one-sentence explanation and that different industries have different issues in the supply chains.
This is how you know the Biden administration is to blame.
Different issues that are causing some increases in prices. And also because we all understand the American people are not looking at cost-to-cost comparisons from this year to 2 years ago.
You hear that? American people are too stupid to understand what's going on economically. This is such a typical line. How patronizing.
They're looking at cost-to-cost comparisons to their checkbooks from 8 months ago or 12 months ago.
They just don't have the long view. They have short attention spans, like a bunch of goldfish.
And even though factually, if you look back to 2 years ago, things may be comparative, that's not how people look at things. So our objective here is to tackle each of these issues with the approach that we think will help address it in the shortest term.
In other words, we caused this, dummies, but you're so dumb, we'll convince you that we fixed it in the end, even if we don't, even as we're ruining everything. Hold tight. More insanity. Jen Psaki has said some really crazy stuff this week, including what all of this chaos affords the Biden administration the opportunity to do to all of us. That's straight ahead. It's 5:30.
Now, from the WMAL WynnBET Studios, Vince Colonnais.
You know, the left loves editing the quotes of the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You saw just a couple weeks ago the ACLU changed one of her quotes, you know, extolling the virtues of women. They removed the word women over and over and put person in there, like just like as if Ruth Bader Ginsburg would have ever been for something as stupid as that. I mean, she's left wing, but she wasn't even that crazy. And I've got another story for you about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the way her quotes have been edited. Katie Couric did an interview with her in 2016, and she spoke out against all these people doing kneeling at these NFL games. Ruth Bader Ginsburg did. Katie Couric didn't share everything with the public to protect Ruth Bader Ginsburg politically. That's journalism for you. I'll share that with you just coming up here in a moment. What RBG actually said at the time, the notorious RBG, as they called her. But in the meantime, I want to focus a little bit still on Jen Psaki and what she said this week and the rest of this crazy administration when it comes to what they think they can get away with with the American public. Jen Psaki said yesterday that this pandemic, it was very Rahm Emanuel-esque of her, this pandemic is a perfect opportunity to fundamentally change the entire U.S. economy. Listen to Circle Backy.
It's not a cut just because someone once proposed something bigger on paper. It's not a it's not a bill or a policy that's going to change lives if nothing is passed. And that's what we're working through. There's a lot of ways to do that. And that's the discussion she's having with her caucus and the president.
Nancy Pelosi
is, of course, playing a prominent role in.
So the president doesn't prefer then one avenue or the other.
The president wants to make fundamental change in our economy, and he feels coming out of the pandemic is exactly the time to do that. And if we don't do it now, if we don't address the cost.
Are you hearing this? I just want to, let me restart it from the relevant portion. The president wants to make fundamental change to our economy. And if we don't do it now, coming out of a pandemic.
The president wants to make fundamental change in our economy, and he feels coming out of the pandemic is exactly the time to do that. And if we don't do it now, if we don't address the cost of childcare, to go back to Josh's question earlier, if we don't address the climate crisis, if we don't ensure that universal pre-K is a reality now, we're not going to have the same opportunity to do it for some time.
If we don't print $6 trillion in checks, $6 trillion in cash right now, and assume all of this power to the federal government right now, our window's going to close. We're going to miss our chance. And now's our chance. Using the chaos of this pandemic, never let a crisis go to waste. Now, the Democrats are upset. The Democrats who are in charge are upset with a lot of people, including the American news media. You may have heard this one. This is Nancy Pelosi this week. She's mad that the press isn't selling $6 trillion in spending to the American public. How come you're not doing this for us?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Our latest CBS News poll shows that only about 10% of Americans describe themselves as knowing a lot of specific things that are in the reconciliation package, and that the majority don't know anything at all. So do you think you need to do a better job at messaging, and going forward, how do you sell this if ultimately you have to...
First of all, I just want to point out, this is such a typical corporate media question of a Democrat, right? The question is not like, hey, don't you think that the American people have had enough inflation? You know, obviously this is polling. This is unpopular, by the way, very unpopular. New polling out that shows all of this reconciliation nonsense, just completely unpopular. Americans not ready for $6 trillion in new spending, enough. But the media question is, your package is so great, but people don't seem to understand how great it is. What can you do better to convince people of how great it is? And Nancy Pelosi is grumpy at that softball of a question. She did not like that.
You sell this if ultimately you have to...
Well, I think you all could do a better job of selling it, to be very frank with you, because every time I come here, I go through the list.
Listen to her go through the list now. Okay, so now she's just complained that the media is not doing a good enough job selling her agenda. Like, normally I can rely on you, but for some reason this time I'm having a lot of trouble. Here's Pelosi. Pelosi can't even list the things that make this package worth passing.
Family medical leave, climate, the issues that are in there.
That's it. That's the whole summary. Climate medical, the issues that are in there.
And but it is true. It is hard to break through when you have such a comprehensive package. As we narrow it down and put it out there, I think that it will. For example, one of the things in the bill is the continuation of the Biden tax credit, that is child tax credit, that is in the within the rescue package.
Yes, which the Biden administration just admitted yesterday is a part of crushing our American economy right now, thanks to the inflation and the supply chain issues that are coming with that. So good job, everybody. Nancy Pelosi, she can't even sell it to the press in the room, and then she tells them, you're doing a bad job of selling this. They're like, well, you can't even speak. So it would help if you could enunciate what would make this package worth passing. Meanwhile, the administration is wants to rifle through the accounts of anybody who moves $600 in or out of their bank account. Have you been following this? Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, one-time Fed chairwoman, speaking in her own patronizing way about how you deserve to have the IRS staring at your every transaction. asked by CBS Evening News this week, Nora O'Donnell, wait a second, I thought you were going after rich people. Why are you going after people who have $600 transactions?
You want banks to report transactions of $600 or more. That's what the IRS wants. Does this mean that the government is trying to peek into our pocketbooks? If you want to look at $600.
Yes is the answer. Yes is the answer. Okay, now let's see what she says. Now, I told you the truth. Let's see what she says.
All our transactions.
Absolutely not.
She lies immediately.
I think this proposal has been seriously mischaracterized.
Oh, really?
The proposal involves no reporting of individual transactions of any individual. Look, the big picture is that we have a tax gap that over the next decade is estimated at
You're not paying enough in taxes.
$7 trillion, namely a shortfall in the amount that IRS is collecting due to a failure.
Due to regular people not paying enough in taxes to satisfy the Biden administration.
Of individuals to report the income that they have earned.
But that's among billionaires. Is that among people who are transferring $600?
No, it tends to be among high-income individuals.
Okay, then.
Whose income is opaque and the IRS doesn't receive information about it.
I love this. It's like all of her donors, too. It's like the cronies and friends of all the people in power who are able to skirt the tax laws. They have effective tax rates of zero. And then she announces that she's going to fix everything by going after people who have $600 transactions in their accounts. So you see, isn't this convenient? Their donors are the ones who are committing the sins, and then we get punished. How does that keep happening? How do we keep getting punished for everybody else's sins? It's America. 544.
Washington's Mall. WMAL. Where Washington comes to talk.
You know, back in 2016, Katie Couric did an interview with the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And during that interview, asked about football players like 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick kneeling and refusing to stand for America's national anthem. Now, at the time, we did get some news stories out of this. Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said that it was, quote, dumb and disrespectful to kneel during the anthem. I would have the same answer if you asked me about flag burning. I think it's a terrible thing to do, but I wouldn't lock a person up for doing it. I would point out how ridiculous it seems to me to do such an act. Now, Katie Couric would go on in that 2016 clip that we saw to ask about, oh, okay, so you're saying they're within their rights. And Ginsburg says, yeah, they're within their rights. But if they want to be stupid, she says, there's no law that should be preventive. If they want to be arrogant, there's no law that prevents them from that. So she was basically saying it's stupid to kneel during the national anthem. Now, what we didn't know at the time, and we now find out courtesy of Katie Couric's new memoir called Going There, the Daily Mail has covered it today. Katie Couric covered up that RBG had a lot more to say about these anthem protests and kneeling during the national anthem. But Couric said that she faced a conundrum when RBG made these comments about Colin Kaepernick. She felt that Ginsburg said that people like Kaepernick were dumb and disrespectful, that they were comments that were, quote, unworthy of a crusader for equality, like the liberal Supreme Court justice. So the day after the sit-down, the head of public affairs for the Supreme Court emailed Couric to say that the late justice had misspoken and asked that some of the quotes be removed from the story. Couric says that she was conflicted because she was a huge RBG fan. So she called a friend, David Brooks. He was a New York Times journalist, and he advised her that Ginsburg probably didn't understand the question. You see what's happening right here. They would never give Trump the benefit of the doubt, ever, ever. They would publish literally every burp that came out of his mouth. But RBG? Oh, no. They would try and massage things to make her look good. So the final version of the story included her criticism of the stupid and arrogant protesters, like I told you. But they left out things that the Daily Mail says were even more inflammatory. Ginsburg went on to say in the unreleased portions of the interview that such protests show, quote, a contempt for a government that has made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life. RBG said that about Colin Kaepernick, that he was showing a, quote, contempt for a government that has made it possible for his parents and his grandparents to live a decent life. She said, quote, which they probably could not have lived in the places they came from. As they became older, they realized this was youthful folly, and that's why education is important. Katie Clark claimed in her memoir here that she just released, again, she held all of this for her memoir, that she, quote, lost a lot of sleep over this one and still wrestles with the decision she made, that is to censor on behalf of a sitting United States Supreme Court justice. According to Couric, she, quote, wanted to protect Ginsburg and felt that the issue of racial justice was a blind spot for her. Got it? So Katie Couric is more forward-thinking than Ruth Bader Ginsburg, known as a trailblazer for women. She is more forward-thinking than Ruth Bader Ginsburg, so she needs to protect her from herself. And so we can't tell the public that RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, thought that the anthem protesters were ungrateful brats. That was the position she took. And that they should be grateful for the country that enabled the success of their grandparents and their parents and for them. Amazing. So in case you're wondering, how's the sausage made? Well, Katie Couric just put it in her memoir. She's like, yeah, I'm covering up for a top government official. I've been very tortured about it. And now, of course, she includes it in her memoir as yet another piece of scandal, right? I guess, you know, Katie Couric wants the attention I'm giving her right now because, you know, the hope is, well, I can sell some books by having some scandalous content. But I do think it's worth bringing up because it's revelatory, right? It demonstrates the lengths to which people whose job it is to simply write down what they saw or heard and then share it with the public, they'll go the distance, depending on their politics, to protect that person from themselves even. Like, oh, no, I can't publish that quote. She couldn't have meant that. Let's protect her because the public will react poorly to this. And I like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't want people to dislike her. And if they did it, if they started disliking her because of my interview, oh, I would just feel awful. Time to protect one of the most powerful people in the world. Jen Psaki asked about Terry McAuliffe today. Terry McAuliffe just doing so badly. He's like, well, if only Congress passed a reconciliation package, then maybe I'd be polling better.
Virginia gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe told AP that he was frustrated by the delay in passing infrastructure, saying, quote, they all got to get their act together and vote. What does President Biden believe he can do to make talks move faster and show verifiable progress for Democrats who are seeking office?
How can he help Terry?
Well, time is not unlimited, Josh, and certainly the president and our entire senior team is continuing to press all members about the need to move forward and to find a way to unify around a package that can deliver results to the American people. It is certainly notable that, of course, former Governor McAuliffe may or may not. He has an election coming up, and so his timeline.
He may or may not.
May be a little pressed by that. Doesn't take an outside political analyst to tell you that, but certainly the president would like to move forward.
An admission from the White House that Biden's awful tenure in office is running them the risk of losing the Commonwealth, and she even almost told the truth. He may or may not actually win this one. Said circle back at Jen Psaki. Ben Dominis joins us tomorrow from The Federalist. He's been doing some interesting things lately. I can't wait to talk to him about that, taking up the cause of life in a big way on the Fox News channel lately. The great one, Mark Levin, up next.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.